I think there's two levels there, Greg. I think in broad terms, we understand what the scheme is. I mean, obviously, we're familiar with the legislation, we're familiar with the regulations, and there's not a huge departure as we would expect for the scheme in terms of what it's going to deliver or not deliver for homeowners. I think you rightly point out that there is a lot of detail. There's a lot, you know, those are big documents and there is a lot of detail. And we've always said the devil is in the detail with regard to this. So, yeah, we've only just had the documentation yesterday evening, like everybody else. So we've had time to sort of have an initial sort of read, but there's an awful lot of detail, especially with regard to the implementation that's not clear yet. And there's a lot of follow-up and a lot of questions that need to be asked of government and also the local authorities in terms of how this works for homeowners.
So just a couple of simple questions, and pardon my, if some of these questions are so obvious it's silly, but there's a couple of things that we've talked about over the years, right? So say, for instance, the issue whereby it's external leaf only, but all the problems that come from doing that, whether an engineer might sign off on it or not, whether you can might get insurance on it. Has that been resolved? Because, you know, like, are engineers, for example, going to sign off on just outer leaves? Or now is it all demolitions? Has anything in relation to that been addressed?
Well, the five options still exist in the scheme. So theoretically, homeowners could actually proceed forward with any of those five options. Now, the reality is that homeowners are, and those that are getting into the issue, I mean, there's a lot of homeowners there who still are coming to this very fresh and need to get into the detail. But the homeowners that are familiar with this issue are by and far advocating for option one, which is demolish and rebuild, because they know the reality of, you know, the science that's going on here, and I'm sure Professor Dunlop is going to speak more about that later. But the reality is that we're dealing with an issue that is fundamentally not freeze thaw. Mm. This is to do with what's in the blocks, and whether it's external, whether it's internal.
So, as far as you know, Lisa, if someone opts for full demolition, can the scheme say, well, no, you don't qualify for that, it's outer leaf only?
Well, ultimately, it's going to be down to the housing agency to decide what option the homeowner goes forward with. So there's a slightly different way of going about things now. Previously, homeowners had to commission their IS 465 report, and then that went into the local council. And it was the technical team at the council that then decided, looking at the report and obviously with the submissions of the homeowner's engineer, how the homeowner should go forward or not. Now, what is going to happen now is that the homeowner has to commission what they call a building condition assessment report. That's almost like the first section of what the engineers would do with regard to the IS 465 report. And should you meet all the criteria on that, then you will be able to put an application in to the housing agency via the local council, and they will then commission the whole sort of suite of testing and assessment. And it will be the housing agency through their engineers and their technical teams that then decide what option they feel is appropriate for the homeowners.
Would either, is there any reference to foundations in this new enhanced scheme? Because even if you were okay to proceed with the demolition, I know I wouldn't be building it on the old foundations, but I also know I couldn't afford to put new foundations in, so I would be banjaxed. So is there any reference to foundations in this enhanced scheme?
Well, Greg, you've just highlight one of the absolute main issues with this scheme. It's absolutely one of the most serious flaws in the scheme, in that it does not address the issue of foundations. So at the moment, we just don't have sufficient scientific research, because government has, you know, not commissioned it. Finally, after huge amounts of pressure, and obviously huge credit to Paul for actually pushing on that one. But, you know, there is research going on now, but we just don't have the insight.
Yeah, but who would lay a block? Sorry, Lisa, I just want to move it along. I hope you don't believe me to be ignorant. That's not my intention. But who would lay a block or a brick on the foundations that they've just tossed these crap blocks off of. I mean, no one's going to. No. But I don't think anyone. Well, maybe they might, but no, I certainly
wouldn't. I entirely agree with you, Greg. And that's a fundamental issue, because the reality is that homeowners do not know whether the foundations on which they are being pushed to build on are fit for purpose or not fit for purpose. That is the fundamental question. And the government at the moment is not addressing that. They're just giving out a blanket statement saying expert opinion is that foundations are fit for purpose. However, that opinion is not scientifically reinforced. So we have this situation where the government wants to push the scheme and push homeowners down a route, but yet the homeowners understand that how can I possibly build on a foundation if I don't know whether it's fit for purpose or not. And it is one of the major, major roadblocks in this scheme as it stands at the moment. And you rightly say there's a whole lot of homeowners who will not proceed, either because they can't, they don't know what to do, they don't have the monies to finance it. The government should have taken a far more conservative view with regard to not having the scientific information available. It should have been, if in doubt, take it out. Support the homeowners to move forward with that 100% assurance that what they're building on is fit for purpose. And this issue down the line is never going to reoccur again.
I'll come back to you. No, I want to come back to you because we've got a bit of time, and hopefully you too. I just think it's really remarkable. I'm not asking or expecting you to comment on it, but I think it's absolutely remarkable that we have a scheme, multi-billion euro scheme, finally announced for this problem. And this problem is primarily at least started in Donegal, if we're not the worst affected. And you don't have either the local minister or the housing minister prepared to come on and welcome it or talk about it. I've never experienced anything like that in my life. I don't know if that's telling or just people happen to be busy or whatever the case might be, but it certainly throws up quite a lot of questions for me. I mean, you should be coming on and going, wow, we finally brought this through, we finally delivered it, and yet it's announced, and no senior government reaction to it at all. It's really quite remarkable. Professor Paul Dunlop is, as I say, Research Director for Geography and Environmental Scientists at Ulster University and, of course, an affected homeowner. Paul, your initial reaction to this, as I say, I don't know if there's any surprises, but we actually have this document now. We have this scheme. What's your initial reactions?
My initial reaction would be, at least now people have final clarity about what's available to allow them to either move on or at least calculate where they're going to be. So that's my initial thought, because this has been a very long delayed thing since I think I remember being in the Dáil last year giving scientific evidence to the housing committee, for the day that was meant to be pre-legislative scrutiny, which it wasn't. But you know, the whole idea of that was, we need to get this through quickly because we need to get people's homes fixed. But I mean, there's been information drip fed to the public the last year, and nothing has really changed. But at least it's there; it's black and white, so people can now go on and see the rates that you get for your home. So if your home's up to 180 square meters, you get 2,045 euro per square meter. Above that, you get less. So interestingly, they've brought on a sliding scale again. You know, there was a lot of kickback from that, if you remember. But effectively, that's what's been brought in again. So my initial feeling at the minute, without having much insight into what buildings cost, is that if you're on the smaller end of the scale, you're going to have a better chance at a grant that might get you moving again than if you're in a larger house. You know, like, it won't take you long to hit the cap. I did a quick calculation. So if your house is up to 180 square meters, you'll get £368,100, and then there's a cap of 420. So above that, above that house size, you've only got 51,900 to play with. You know, you don't have much more. So I think people in bigger homes are going to be really disappointed by this, because they're going to be left significantly short in terms of a redress scheme that's been promising to get people 100%. It's not. It's definitely not. Smaller homes probably could be there or thereabouts, depending on the sort of specifications they have in their home. But, you know, you got to remember, you've got to take out the people who went through stage one already, you're going to lose $6,000 or there, thereabouts from your testing fees that you've got to, that comes off the top of your grant. Then you're going to have to take on the fees for your engineer or your architect or your, what are they called now? There are like three different types of professionals. A quantity surveyor or a chartered surveyor can be part of as well. So depending on what their fees are, that's going to take a chunk out of the grant as well too. And then if you decide, for example, that you're not prepared to build on your foundations because your foundation concrete came from the same supplier as your blocks that your house is falling apart from, then that's an additional cost. So I think in the next few months, you're going to get a clear idea of how this grant's going to fall out for people. But there are at least a bit of hope now today that people can go and actually start calculating what they're going to get, and they can start talking to builders and see if they're going to be there or thereabouts.
In relation to this being a 100% scheme, we revisited all of this because the 90-10 scheme wasn't a 90-10 scheme at all. I'm just confused as to, in terms of, you know, the demolition, you know, inevitably foundations having to be changed and the rebuild cost, what kind of a house, how big a house, because you can't build a smaller house than the one you've knocked down, how big a house could you build for €420,000 with all the additional costs? I mean, maybe if you've got a three-bedroom bungalow, could you possibly change the foundations and rebuild the house back to the way it was before you were infected with this defective material? I mean, do we know? Could you build a three-bedroom bungalow? If that's what you actually had, I mean, what can you get with everything that would have to be spent for $420,000?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it would be really good if you could get an architect or a quantity surveyor onto the program and talk to them, because they should know the details of this. Mm. I mean, I know that ultimately defective homeowners have been given a rate by the SCSI rates. But, I mean, well, that reflects reality on the ground. You know, they could tell you better than someone like myself. You know, I'm not on that end of things. But, you know, if it's definitely clear that the rates that are being given are higher for the smaller end of the homes in Donegal than the higher end, the ones that are larger. And, you know, I do feel really sorry for the people who invested early on. They have a sort of larger home. They're going to be out.
Well, you see, the thing is, and I'll bring Lisa back into a second, especially with this sliding scale being brought back in, it doesn't really talk to how things work in this county, how people might afford to, or to build a larger home, because it sort of presumes that if you have a larger home, you are better resourced. But that's not always the case. Like, you might have someone who lives their life somewhat differently or is very handy that's able to build a larger home compared to what I might be able to, because I'm going to have to sort of get contractors and stuff to do it. But this sort of talks to the fact that if you have a larger square footage, then clearly you've got better resources, or at least you should have. But that's simply just not a reality here.
Well, it's really flawed assessment from the government, if that's what they're thinking. Is, you know, ultimately it doesn't matter if people build bigger houses or smaller houses. You know, your circumstances are what your circumstances are, and if you're early on, you could afford to build a larger home. It's absolutely no fault of yours that you were supplied defective blocks from aggregates that were non-compliant under EU regulations, and your house is now falling apart. I mean, it's a real travesty. You know, people have been, ultimately, when you go back to the root source of this, I mean, people have been really badly impacted by failure of government to regulate the construction industry in Ireland. That's what this problem is. And it doesn't matter if your house is 5,000 square foot home. You bought the material in good faith and you were sold a defective product, and they should have put that right. Mm. But they went down, as you know, they went down every route possible to make this as difficult as possible for homeowners.
Lisa, I mean, obviously, you know, we compare this to other schemes that have been there, and we've been doing that over the course of the last couple of years, how Donegal homeowners are being treated differently to other affected homeowners. We celebrate that other people affected by the likes of pyrite and what have you got a better deal, but it is literally geographical discrimination. Why are our homeowners in Donegal and the other affected counties not being treated the same? As I say, we're not having to pump this money out now. We're not having to dig into all of our reserves. This is a multi-year a multi-year scheme with lots of clawback as well in it, let's not forget, as well, in terms of creating employment, but also VAT and all that kind of stuff. It still doesn't really, we still don't know, Lisa, why Donegal and other homeowners are being treated to other homeowners whose houses and flats and apartments deteriorated through no fault of their own.
I just think the reality is, unfortunately, geography plays a huge factor in the way that we're treated. Unfortunately, we're not on the doorstep of Leinster House. We are 4 hours down the road. Donegal has often been referred to as the forgotten county. And this crisis really underlines that, you know, when it comes to crunch matters like this, that is unfortunately very true. Also, just if you think about the, you know, the political representation here, unfortunately we don't have a huge swathe of government ministers and TDs within the county. I think there's a calculated risk gone on here in terms of how much they're prepared to lose potentially politically. And those in Leinster with regard to Pyrite, or those in Leinster with regard to defective apartments, they have far greater political sway purely by the fact of their geographical location. And this is a civil rights issue. It is a civil rights issue because the homeowners who are victim to this issue, which is regulatory and market surveillance failure on behalf of the state, which supplied defective product into the market for years and years unchecked. We are the victim in the same way as anybody else, whether it be defective apartments, victims of pyrite underfloors. But yet we are being treated very, very differently. And we are not anywhere near the 100% redress that the government is continually talking about. And, you know, it is discrimination and it is a civil rights issue.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it is what it is. As I say, you know, let's say, for instance, people wait to find out some clarity on the foundations, for an example. That pushes us ever closer to a general election, for an example. So are people going to say, right, well, by the time, if we ever get clarity on the foundations, I might as well wait another year because the opposition has made these amazing promises. It would be unbelievable if they're able to follow through on those. But also we've got the efforts ongoing in Europe. We've got the court case that is taking place. Is anyone going to roll the dice and spend an additional 50, 60, 70, 80,000 euro engaging in this scheme when there are a few other irons in the fire? Do you know what I mean? And this is not—I'm not criticizing the scheme. I don't know. I'm just simply trying to tease out the reality of people's lives here in Donegal. I mean, who is going to not sort of say, "Well, let's see how Coleman Legal get on, or let's see how our European endeavours get on, or let's see if Sinn Féin actually back up what they're saying because they've promised the sun, August the moon, August the stars." What? How do you think the public will react, Lisa? And I'll ask Paul the same question once you've finished.
I think it's very much going to depend on each homeowner's individual take and circumstance. There are homeowners who just literally cannot wait. They feel that they have to move forward because they're in desperate circumstances and time is not on their side.
Yeah.
And they basically have to move forward. There are others who, I think, as you point out, may sort of hedge their bets and see what happens down the road. That's if they have that luxury of maybe being in a home that's not so badly affected. So I think personal circumstances are going to dictate how people move forward, and also means and resources. That's also going to dictate. There are many people whose they're so badly impacted with regard to their mental health, they just can't bear the thought of actually having to deal with this for this prolonged amount of time. And to be honest, even if they're having to put considerable resource of their own into it to get to the other side, to have this issue out of their lives, there's many homeowners that we've talked to are in that situation. Mm-hmm. And they just say, it's really difficult. I don't really have the resources, but I'm going to do everything I can to get to the other side. And I'll use the scheme in the best way I can to support that and to go forward.
Paul, I'll put the same question to you.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think the people who can afford to move on will move on. That's what I think. I mean, we're all caught in a sort of horrific situation where your family home is ruined. But there will be people who can afford to move on, and I think that they will. And for the people who can't afford to move on, they're going to be stuck in limbo. And their only hope, really, for 100% redress and for the affordability of the scheme is if Coleman Legal works. Do you know what I mean? Even though the endeavours in Europe are happening, those endeavours are really about trying to stop this happening again in the future. Like the European Commission, from my understanding of being there with them, they will not be acting retrospectively or trying to go back to the Irish government going, you know, you actually need to do right by these people and give them a full 100% redress. This is clearly about one thing only from their point of view, is to understand market surveillance in Ireland and ensuring that it's not a paper exercise, but it's something that is working effectively. And we clearly know that it's not, because we've seen Mairead Feenan from the Market Surveillance Office down in Dublin stating that it's a national emergency. So I think, just to answer your question, if you can afford it, I think you will. And I totally agree with Lisa. There are people who are just absolutely in dire straits mentally, trying to look at their home falling apart around their ears, and will have no choice but think they have to do this. I think that it would be good if you could get the 100% redress focus groups on and talk about that.
We'll over the coming days for sure. Yeah.
Because there's a group doing work on the banking side and on the finances of this, you know. And what's really disappointing in this legislation is that the banking sector and the insurance sector have got off completely scot free. So, you know, they need to come to the table to help people move on with their lives as well, too.
Okay.